often feel the pressure of having to rely almost solely on word of mouth and referrals to continue growing your agency? If so, you're not alone. Even if you have all the systems and capabilities to grow your agency, you may still not be effectively marketing your firm. And it's often for a common reason. You've become what Nick Bennett calls an interchangeable agency. You see, if you're like most marketing agencies, it's difficult for you to tell clients the problem that you really solve. You struggle to get clients to see and truly believe that you're different. If that's you, you've been unknowingly positioning yourself as an interchangeable agency. The answer is to actually stop marketing your solutions and trying to convince buyers that you're better. Instead, you can start marketing the problem and become the default solution. In today's episode with Nick Bennett, founder of Harness and Hone, he shares the three steps you can take to clearly define and then dominate your niche in just 90 days. You'll learn from Nick how to go beyond the typical niching by vertical market, how to clearly define that problem that you solve for your clients, how to develop your POV around that problem, and finally, then how to deploy that POV out into the market, into the right discovery channels for your unique audience. To start, let's hear from Nick in how he developed this tagline that I absolutely love. It's not that you can't grow your agency, it's that you can't market it.
For the last like 5.5-ish years, I was inside of a globally recognized HubSpot agency partner. And every time I would talk to other agency marketers or other just agency owners, they were like, you guys do a lot of marketing. Like, you're just out there. It's like, I don't know, this just seems pretty normal to us. Like, this is normal. Like, we have a big team and we produce a lot of content. We do a lot of things. And they always just kind of led with this feeling that like things weren't going so well. And as time went on and towards like the end of my time at this agency, I started looking around as like, and we know that economics and like the dynamics of the market are changing like rapidly right now for every company, not just agencies. When I was like looking around, I'm like, all of these agencies are really just doing the same thing, or they're trying to re-swizzle the same thing to sound like they're better, faster, smarter, cheaper than everybody else. And it's just like, and everyone I talked with said, hey, we're trying scaling up and we're trying EOS and like they have the structures and the org charts and they're doing all this stuff. And I was like, and it kind of just came together, this idea that's like, well, they have the skills and the people and all the things to be able to get their agency from where it is to where they want it to be. They're just not actually marketing their agency. And we can go into this, we'll go into this in extreme detail later, but like the premise is that they're not marketing it because they have nothing really interesting to say.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about having something strong to say, having a definitive point of view, something that we touched on a little bit in a previous episode with Mike and Gabby Grinberg at Proofpoint Marketing, as they talked about developing their strategic narrative. That'll definitely be a good compliment after you listen to Nick and I. Let's start there, Nick, with maybe some of the mistakes agencies are making right now in their efforts to quote unquote stand out. What are some of the things they're doing that they think they're doing to market their agency, to differentiate their agency, but it's not actually giving them the results? They're not successfully marketing their agency. And why are some of those things not working? And then we're going to get into your three steps to actually define your niche and market your agency more successfully.
Agencies have been basically given, they've all got the same advice. Like 10 years ago, everyone told agencies, as long as you, if you license intellectual property, if you join partner programs, if you put badges on your website, or like if you specialize in a vertical, or if you specialize in a service, like this will help your agency stand out. And the trouble with that, like back then it wasn't a big deal, right? There wasn't a ton of saturation. Like the HubSpot partner directory had tens of agencies. Now, if you Google, you know, HubSpot web design agency, I kid you not, this is a real link in Google from HubSpot. It says the 3,848 best web design agencies on HubSpot. And you're like,
what a headline.
And you're like, okay, like we have a serious problem here. So like at the time, yeah, licensing their IP and white labeling their content, slapping their badge on your website wasn't the worst thing in the world. There was a lot of like transfer credibility and transfer of just like overall authority. And now that there's 6,000 agencies in the HubSpot directory, and I'm using them as an example, there's tons of other directories. HubSpot's one that's at scale and a lot of people are in it and a lot of people just kind of get it. So they all got this advice, and it's not working anymore, because when you use those types of things, right? Like, I call it marketing for someone else. You're using their context and their logos and their language to communicate how you're different. And it doesn't make you different at all. And what ends up happening is that these agencies end up fighting over who's better, faster, smarter, or cheaper than the other person sitting next to them in the directory. So, and this shows up in a bunch of different ways. Like, the most prominent one you'll see is just the way that they even communicate their headlines on their homepage. A lot of people will just say, we'll help you, helping manufacturers grow better with HubSpot. Well, now we're using HubSpot's language. And how do manufacturers know that you know something about growing them that anyone else doesn't? So it kind of leads you down this rabbit hole of saying, like, something's not right anymore. This isn't working, because if it was working, we'd have a lot less agencies that are on the brink of laying people off, that are really growing the way that they know that they can.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I was literally in a LinkedIn DM thread with an agency owner earlier today, and he was saying, we have no problem retaining clients. From what I hear from my peers, we're actually kind of ahead of the curve from at least what other agency owners are telling me, but landing the net new logos is still a struggle for us. So how can we do this? How can we get in front of these clients and actually differentiate ourselves, which I think is a great segue into this three-part framework that you've developed. So give people a high level who haven't seen your presentation. I know there was folks raving about it in Pete Caputa's Co-Grow group that gets together on Fridays. They were saying this was just really inspiring, really encouraging. Let's talk about the three steps: defining the problem, developing the POV, and then deploying your POV. Give us a high level of what each of these steps are, and then we'll go into how to execute them. What are kind of the ins and outs of each step? Let's start there, Nick.
So I tell everyone, this is something that comes from category design. And is like, if you can market the problem, you become the solution. A lot of agencies operate under conventional marketing wisdom, which is market the benefits, not the features. I always say that there's conventional agency wisdom, which is market your solutions and try to prove you're better. You know, so I've interviewed like probably close to 100 agencies just in the last 60-ish days. And every time I ask them this question, what problem do you solve? I either just get crickets back or I get solutions. If I get solutions, it's usually just like a generalized expertise, like generalized kind of like full service type of, you don't really get much. And so the inability to even define the problem really puts agencies in a bad spot, because they end up relying basically 100% on client referrals. So like you were saying, they deliver great work and their clients love them. It's just, if they're not marketing for them, then they're not going to be able to grow their business. And that's what puts them in a tough spot. And so when we shift our lens from, well, how can we prove that we're better? How can we market the benefits? How can we, like, there's this mentality that if people just knew what we did or knew what we were capable of, that they, and if they could just see us, that they would pick us. We move from that to make the problem we solve highly visible to everyone who experiences it. I tell this to every single agency owner that I work with. And so that's why we start, define the massively valuable problem. And we spend a lot of time in that. And the easiest way to break this down is that if you were to think, look at all of the effective marketing, it's just like, what moves people to action? It's not solutions, it's problems. You know, there's direct response marketing, there's impulse purchasing that is solution oriented. They don't solve a problem, but it's lightweight. When you're talking about a B2B service-based, like professional services purchase, in order to inspire action, you need to beat the problem to death. And once you're done talking about it, and once you think you've approached it from every angle, that's when people will just start, they'll just be beginning to listen. It's less about the best service wins, and it's so much more about evangelizing the problem.
Absolutely.
Because once people see it, they say they can't unsee it.
Yeah.
And once they see it, they will demand a solution from you. And that's proven itself true with just me launching my own business and the way that I'm trying to communicate and move my own message into the marketplace, the agencies that I'm working with. And even there's people that I don't work with that follow these types of principles. And in like the post you mentioned with that Pete put up, I do like a mini case study on Refine Labs. There's a reason that their agency was able to go from zero to 20 million in 3 years. And the majority of agencies I talk to are about a decade old and can't crack 1 or 2 million.
They didn't go to market saying, we can run your ads better than these other agencies, right? Yep. When I think Chris Walker and I think Refine Labs, I think the problems with the MQL, the problems with the attribution model. It's so interesting hearing you talk about this. I think about the problems that I know Chris has talked about more so than I even think about Refine Labs and how they specifically solve for it, right? Because if I know he intimately understands the problem, then if I'm a potential buyer for Refine Labs, then I'm obviously going to go to them first, whether I know the ins and outs of how they solve it. If they intimately know the problem, they can probably solve it for me.
Exactly.
Right? Okay. So step one is really defining the problem. Step two is developing your POV. And then third is deploying that POV to the market. We've already kind of touched on number one a good bit here. So I want to double down here, Nick. I love what you said about evangelism too. I've recently moved into an evangelism role here at teamwork.com, and folks who talk about the chief evangelist role and evangelism, like my friend Ethan Butte, who served as chief evangelist at BombBomb for a long time, he said that one of the big roles of an evangelist is to evangelize the problem. So I think you're definitely onto something there that is true for B2B brands as well as for agencies. Talk to us a little bit about how you recommend agencies start to define the problem that they solve. Is it interviewing customers? What questions should they be asking? This was actually something that I believe Jenny Karn from Lumino, if I'm getting that agency name right, was chiming in after your session with Pete Caputa and Cogro. So talk to us a little bit about how you start to explore the problem among your client base so that then you can define it and move on to steps two and three.
Yeah. So there's basically two types of problems, or like two ways to think about this. You can solve an old problem in new ways, or you can solve a new problem. And just depends on where your business is at. A lot of people set out to just discover, like to reverse engineer what problem they're currently solving for people, because they do valuable work for people. Their retention is high. Clients love them. Like their referrals are decent enough to keep them going, not enough to keep them growing. So it's like, how do we just package that up? So a big part of it is this discovery aspect. And so if you're trying to just like to figure out what problem you're solving for people today, it's like I help them interview customers. And so I have a free interview template. It's a part of my niche design playbook, which you can throw in the show notes. It's free. It's ungated. I don't need your email for it. And there's qualitative research interview templates in there. And basically, there's one for customers and there's one for like highly engaged audience members. And so there's some nuances into the difference of the types of questions you ask, but basically it's just like you want to find out from people, one, like, why did you hire us in the first place? And you do this in person. You don't, or like, you know, you do this on a video call or something. You don't do it in like a Google form, because when you get the answer, you need to be able to say, like, why is that important to you? You need to be able to go 2-3 layers deep, because that's where the truth is. And so I have a whole bunch of questions that we ask. It's like, well, what did you hire us to do? Like, what else did you consider? What other categories were you considering purchasing from? You know, what was going on in your life when you realized you needed this? Have you tried to solve this particular problem in other ways before you came to us? Like, what were you afraid of? So there's, I can rattle off these things forever. And that's when you talk to customers. If you talk to highly engaged audience people, right? So a lot of B2B companies right now are real hot on doing events. Well, I bet you there's a small group of people that show up to every event you run, whether it's weekly, monthly, whatever. Well, you have a relationship with those people. I encourage my clients to reach out to those types of people, talk with them. First of all, what do you think we do as a business? Find out the way that, because the way your audience, the audience and buyers position you is your position. So regardless, there's no amount of website messaging tinkering you can do to make people see you a different way. And so it helps to understand what they see. The other thing is, like, have you ever considered purchasing from us? If yes, like, why didn't you move forward with that? If no, why not? Like, you try to uncover some of these things. This isn't a sales call, right? Like, people, if you come to these conversations with a genuine intent of trying to learn, people will tell you everything you need to know willingly, and they won't feel some type of way about telling you the truth.
Those are some really good questions. I especially like what you called out there. And well, if you did consider working with us, why didn't you? Right? Another interesting question is, if you asked your current clients, what almost caused you not to work with us?
Yeah.
You get some interesting insights there. So for everybody listening, hit that back button a couple times, because Nick was rattling off some really good questions. We covered a lot in the last 60 seconds or so. Nick, I saw this in some of your engagement in the LinkedIn threads I saw in the comments. What are some of the common misses that you think agency owners and leaders can have when they're trying to identify and label the problem? You talked about making sure that you hit on the emotion or maybe some of the broader ramifications. You need to go a few layers deep. Maybe talk a little bit about where folks start with identifying the problem and where they might get it wrong if they're trying to identify it, and maybe some of the common pitfalls that might be there.
You can frame a problem in two ways, right? There can be massively valuable, and then there can just be gigantic problem. And most businesses, this isn't just the way that agencies communicate. A lot of business B2B companies communicate this way, but agencies seem to really enjoy it, which is like something, something to grow your business. I use the examples like Google Ads to grow your business is like a very popular headline for companies that offer Google Ads. And sometimes you get the reverse. They'll say, grow your business with Google Ads, right? And there's this like generic service, gigantic, generic solution, kind of gigantic problem combo that they run. And if your problem is that big, or like the problem you solve is that big, most people just won't believe you. And if you did have something, like if you knew something about Google Ads that everybody else didn't, or if you were truly capable of achieving this monumental outcome of just generalized business growth through this thing that everybody already knows exists and most people are already doing, then like, how is it that you are still out here? Like, you should have retired already. Like, you should have already been billionaire. Like, your comp, everyone should already be working with you. It just doesn't add up. And buyers know this. And so gigantic problems just don't resonate, right? We need to get down to the specifics. There's definitely emotional components to it. When we talk about like defining the problem, and this is really where like, this is where a lot of people get turned around. People will say, you know, well, my specialty or my niche is manufacturing companies. And so they just kind of just say marketing agency for manufacturing companies. And these types of things don't work for the same reasons. That doesn't resonate. People don't understand like how it is that you know. So when you think about the specialization or the verticalization that most people lean into, this is where you use that lens to filter your problem. So I'll give you an example, right? So in my business, I help agencies go through this whole interchangeable to niche process. And I use the lens that marketing agencies are the people I want to work with. And I use the lens to say, how does the problem I solve show up in their life? How does it show up in their work? The verticalization is a filter or a lens for you. It is not just we stop there. And that's what a lot of people do. You'll see the way that they market is like you could replace any industry. You could just, it's a Mad Lib. You could spin a wheel and get whatever industry you want. Popsicle stick, whatever company, like you can get, you can put any industry in there. And I guarantee you that the majority of the things that they say could be completely interchangeable with that. And so we lean into the problem. We say, how does it show up in their life? And so like, and when I talk about things like to agency owners saying, hey, like this problem shows up in your world because you rely on referrals for growth. And so if a client leaves, you're put in a really tough spot and you might have to make some really hard decisions because you don't know where your next deal is going to come from, or you can't create an opportunity for you. This problem shows up in your life because you're pressed on pricing a lot, because a lot of people can claim they do what you do. Well, that press on pricing forces your margins down, requires you to take on more work than you should, creates a poor work environment, creates a whole bunch of other, manifests a whole bunch of different things inside your company. And it prevents all of these things, prevents you from commanding a premium price as an agency, from standing out, from forcing your buyers to make a choice, from people wanting to work. Like, so there's all these things. And when people get on calls with me, not only do they say the words back to me, they tell me, I feel seen. Like, how did you know? Some version of that. And one, it's just like, it makes you feel like you're on the right track in life and you're doing the right things and you're trying to help the right people because you truly understand what they're going through. So I encourage people to do that. It's like, don't use your verticalization as the end point. Like, that's just the start. That's your filter.
Yeah, it's still part of the picture. We're not saying like there's not value in focusing in on a niche. You focus in on helping agencies, right? But you understand the problem because you spent years inside of a HubSpot elite partner, right? Yep. A highly successful agency. And what you're saying here, Nick, reminds me of what I hear Sam McKenna talking about on LinkedIn a lot. Show me, you know me. She's kind of talking about that for the sales profession. I think as agencies and thinking about marketing our agencies, we've got to show them that we know them, but we've got to show them that we know their problems and the ramifications of their problems and what they're feeling when they face those problems, right? Those are the sorts of things we want to get at. So that verticalization or specialization can still be part of it, but that just gives you the lens to go deeper with that community, with that specific audience, to then be able to say, well, is it like this? Because I was talking to this other manufacturing CEO and they said this. Is that the same for you? How would you describe it, right? It's one layer past that. And there's some fairly obvious questions, I think, if we think about it, but we're oftentimes not thinking about it. So let's get on to steps number two and three in this framework, Nick. So number two is to develop the POV, develop your strong point of view about the problem. Talk to us about what really happens in this step and how agencies can start to take the step there if they are beginning to label the problem that they solve for, get beyond just marketing the solution.
Most people can't get to phase two because they get to right where you just articulated, which is like the verticalization thing. And then they go, well, wait, what if we alienate people? And they're like, you're right. We don't want to do that. And that's when you get this like overly generalized, like I alluded to earlier in the conversation, right? Over generic, overly like just bland, we help you grow your business type communication from these companies. So if you can get past this point and you can get to the problem and you can figure out how it shows up for people and you can clearly articulate like who's suffering from this, then we can get to the POV. The POV is probably the most fun part of all of it, in my opinion, because
I agree.
This is when the creation, like the creating starts, right? So the point of view is so massively valuable to any company, regardless, like whether you're an agency or not, but it, most specifically for agencies, because everyone has the same point of view. We help you grow your business. And so this is really what's going to carve out your niche, right? Like this is what's going to carve the niche. It's going to organize your narrative. People talk about strategic narrative. Being able to tell a story is a wonderful skill set, and it's a necessary skill set. And be able to kind of take someone through the narrative is critical. But if you don't have what I call like the building blocks of the POV, then the narrative is just going to be that, a narrative, right?
Yes, I completely agree. I see POV as a strategic building block to the strategic narrative.
Totally.
I encourage people like start developing a POV or multiple points of view, and that will get you to the strategic narrative. Like Andy Raskin and these guys, like we look at it and we're like, oh, that strategic narrative. It's just so beautiful. That takes a lot of time, a lot of thinking, a lot of conversations, right?
Yeah.
But you can't get there and you can't just tell this great story unless you have a point of view on, you know, as Andy says, the big shift that's happening in the world. So sorry, tangent, keep going, man. This is fire.
No, you're good, man. Cause what you're talking about, this stuff shows up in people's businesses in different levels, like varying degrees of importance. If you're trying to go public, yeah, Andy Raskin's strategic narrative system and the way that he thinks and operates, like that is so much more valuable end to end for a company trying to go public, right? The larger, like if you consider what I do as agency niche design, a niche within category design. Category design is what helps big E entrepreneurs, right? People who accept venture capital, trying to grow, scale a business to 100 million and go public type companies, those types of people, like you need to deploy this stuff in an entirely different way. And if you're like a small entrepreneur and you're brewing beer, like a niche down for a brewery looks like hazy IPA. Like hazy's the niche within an IPA. IPA is a niche of craft beer inside of the larger beer category, right? Like it's very, you don't need all of these varying things. And so professional B2B services firms like agencies, like I think that this is probably the linchpin to their success in that like really lean into this part because it's you don't need to go overboard with the Andy Raskin stuff, I think, at this level.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think the work that Andy does is fantastic, and I love reading his stuff, and I believe in what he's doing for who he's doing it for.
Right, right.
But it doesn't apply to everybody. And the same reason that full-blown category design doesn't apply to every business, but the thinking certainly does. And we need to kind of navigate, like, what applies to us? And I think that's where this...
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's bring it to the agencies in the process of developing the point of view. What are then some of the questions? They've asked a lot of questions to really label the problem, get the emotional components to it within their audience and their client base or their actively engaged audience who aren't clients. How do they go about developing the points of view? Or maybe we could talk about some examples of POVs to give people an idea. We touched on Refine Labs earlier. We could go there or another you might want to call out.
Sure. So let's kind of lay out, like I said, I call these the building blocks of the POV. And so there's three blocks and there are, I recently added a sixth bolt. There used to be five. I recently added a sixth. So the three blocks, again, this isn't anything novel to me. It's just how I apply the category design thinking to agencies.
Fair enough.
And how they can best utilize this stuff. So block number one is taking the problem we just defined and framing it and naming it. We need to give it context. I talked about how when you use, you know, badges on your website and partner programs and all in licensing intellectual property, you outsource your context to another company and you're trying to use them to market your business. This is about creating your own context. The problem and how we use the verticalization about how the problem shows up. So framing the problem, helping people understand what it is in the first place. I use the term and I'll use it over and over and over again, making it highly visible to everyone who experiences it. This is really where that comes into play. So we frame it and then you name it. Call it something because you want people to advocate and evangelize what you're trying to do inside of their company. And this is where the wheels fall off for most agencies is that they're trying to convince people. And this is why every company on planet Earth says we target CEOs. It's because they can't activate content marketers or they can't activate marketing managers because they're advocating for solutions to problems that aren't massively valuable or highly urgent, right? And so the marketing manager will go to their VP or something and say, we need to buy this thing. And they're going to be like, well, we don't care. What we do need is to solve some problems. And if you have a massively valuable problem, they will instinctively try to advocate for solving it internally. So name and frame the problem is step number one. This is how you activate champions inside companies. This is also just how you get people to want to join and be part of your what you're doing. Gives them the language to communicate it amongst them, their peers.
Yes.
Chris Walker is a phenomenal case study for this.
Mm-hmm.
Is that he effectively, and you already kind of laid this out, he framed the entire problem, all the things that were wrong with software-based attribution, called it the attribution mirage, among a whole host of other things. But like, so he's really, really great at this. And he looks at the world through this lens. Block number two is to evangelize a future without it. We talk about thought leadership a lot in like the marketing agency world. There's like the leading part where you have to lead people somewhere new and different. It's like, what direction are you facing? So we need to show people not only that the problem exists and that it's prevalent in their life, but there's a world without it. What does it look like? And they say, like, you have to be able to communicate this world so clearly, like you're already living in it, like you're already there. But we can't do any of that if we don't even know what the problem is or if people don't agree that the problem exists. So the framing, so that's why framing comes first. The last block of the POV is, they say, build a bridge from the problem to the future with your solution, right? I say, if the only way to get to a world without the problem is to cross a bridge that you've built. And right, that's your solution. And you said it earlier, if you can clearly articulate a problem, I'm going to assume you have the solution. I don't need to know the nuts and bolts of the whole thing. I'm going to come to you. And this is where people get scared, is that if they say this problem shows up for B2B SaaS companies in this specific way, that they're going to turn off home services businesses. Well, the problem may show up for home services businesses in a different way or the same way that they do for B2B SaaS companies. It doesn't really matter. It's just, who are you best capable of solving the problem for? How does it show up in their life? How do you resonate with them? People who have the problem show up in their life in the way that you talk about will reveal themselves to you. This has happened in my own business. so many people have come to me that are not marketing agencies have been like, hey, I'm not the person you said has this problem or like the person that you're talking to, but I have this problem and it shows up in my life this way. What do you have for me? And that allows me to create new products and create new revenue streams and do so many amazing things and have
yes.
and learn a ton.
I'm so glad you said that, man, because it goes back to what we started in this step number two of developing the POV, because you said a lot of agency owners, they stop, even if they do a good job of number one and identifying the problem, they are afraid of alienating people. Like, oh, if we say manufacturing, then we're going to lose these logistics folks, right?
Right.
But what you just said is what normally people say about niching down is, but you're going to have stronger pull with those folks that you really do serve in that niche. You just kind of shed light into more of it, is that you will get people who think about the problem in the same way, who see that you are describing it and see you as the solution. And they'll almost come to you and be like, I know you named like this specific niche in what you're talking about, but man, I feel what you're saying, like what you said earlier, I feel seen, and they'll be coming to you saying, can you work with us?
They won't care.
Right. And so there will be people that you think you're alienating that you will actually draw in because there's this common thread of they feel that problem. Another quick example, not from a large agency, but from a new solopreneur, my buddy Dan Sanchez, who was at Sweetfish with me. He's been talking. He's very good at kind of this naming thing. And so just to give people another example here, he's talked about the quarterly conundrum. So he's really focused on helping B2B SaaS companies grow an audience. And he's talked about this quarterly conundrum where we want to grow an audience, but we still have quarterly numbers to hit. And so we fail to do the things that over the long haul are going to help us build an engaged audience, which is going to lead to more leads and income and revenue for the business. But we still have to answer to these quarterly KPIs. And so I can't explain kind of all of the emotional ramifications and the broader implications like you talk about in that problem. But that's just another example of kind of naming and framing the problem that I wanted to share with folks for an example.
It's a fantastic example. And people think that this stuff is a marriage decision. Like whatever you pick is going to be the way it is for the rest of time. Listen, problems evolve, like new categories create new insights that like things reveal themselves over time. Like the problems of today were not the problems of yesterday, and that's okay. Like that's the way this goes. And so whatever you decide today is going to evolve over time. I mean, we use Refine Labs as a great example. They have evolved from this attribution mirage. I mean, they still very much evangelize a lot of these things, but over into this new world of revenue R&D and the problem of revenue chaos and this future that revenue R&D creates where you don't have any of the, I grabbed some screenshots of it. It was just like, you know, the loss of market share, no priorities. They're launching unproven strategies, no understanding of what's working, like the wasted ad spend. So like these things evolve and they're living proof in the last two years or so that you can go from one thing to another and evolve your point of view and evolve your narrative around it.
Absolutely. And I think that's solid advice too. And one that would be echoed by our mutual friend, Pete Caputa, that we've already mentioned in this conversation. One thing I've heard him talk about and even say on LinkedIn is that as he's engaged with the same audience that we're speaking to get today in agency owners, he's sharing things about, this is what I'm hearing, this is what I'm seeing. He leads the co-grow group on Fridays. And then we'll talk about those sorts of things. It's never from a, I've named the problem, here's the solution, it's the only way. It's like this feeling of like, I'm potentially a guide because I'm out here hacking through the bushes with you guys. And I think I'm a few steps ahead, but I'm still on this path of the bridge and I'm helping build it, right? But I'm walking down it at the same time. And I think kind of taking some of that ego out of it allows you to not feel like you have to have it perfect and can help you evangelize the problem more effectively with the community that you serve. So I think we rounded it out really well in step number two. Let's get on to number three, Nick, deploy your POV. Talk to me a little bit about what this then looks like. If you have successfully taken the first steps to define the problem, develop the POV, what does deploying the POV look like?
So this is the part most agencies like, because this is like the do marketing part, right? The easiest way to describe it is like, this is moving that POV, that message into the marketplace. How do you do it? How do you start? How do you think about it? So the primary way that I encourage, you know, like the clients that I work with, I explain to them how to think about this is there's two categories of marketing channels. There's intent channels where someone needs something, right? Google is the intent channel of Earth at this point. There's YouTube search. Some people use TikTok search. Instagram search is also coming up. So I need something. I need a transactional information exchange, right? A lot of people will over leverage SEO for this stuff to try and show up and try to build affinity with audiences through information exchange. Nothing wrong with intent channels, by the way. It's just, it exists and it's a thing. And so we need to think about it that way. Then there's discovery channels. This is really where most niche agencies and anyone who is like, the term creating demand is thrown around a lot. It's like, if you're trying to do that, right? I say, if you can shine a new light on new problems, you're capable of creating demand. But you can't do that if someone is in Google searching for something that they, like a problem that they already think that they have or searching for. There's a lot of confirmation bias when you're searching, when you're using YouTube to learn how to do something. So we use discovery channels for that. Those are, that's your Instagram feed. That's YouTube shorts. YouTube is one of the most fascinating channels on planet Earth because it is fully scaled intent and discovery. Nothing else is.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, actually. Yeah.
No one else is a search engine at that level and is capable of serving up just net new discovery type content to people. So YouTube Shorts has taken, I think there's like over 30 billion shorts served per day now. I mean, it's outrageous. So YouTube Shorts is a fantastic discovery channel. Obviously, LinkedIn is really, really big in B2B or just B2B services. We said Instagram, Facebook, anything that's a feed, right? If you're trying to doom scroll your way to the bottom of a feed, like that's a discovery channel, right? You have no intention. You're not looking for anything. Your mindset, this is a big thing too. Marketers kind of give up on this one a long time ago is mindset. If you are looking for transactional information, it's going to be really hard to convince them that the problem they have isn't actually the problem they have. It's not impossible, but it's not the most effective way to do it. I encourage the businesses that I work with to leverage discovery channels in a really intentional way, right? And once we figure out who we're selling to, how the problem shows up in their life, and what that specific problem is, and how they, and all the nuances around that, we have this point of view, we figure out where they hang out. And those are some questions we asked back in phase one when we talked about the interviews. We've, at that time, we're also learning, where do you hang out? Who do you know and who do you trust in this X, Y, or Z category or space? Who do you look to for information? We find that out. A lot. Oftentimes, people just regress into what they know. And so a lot of times, it's just like, let's just blog about it. Mm-hmm. When even if we try to distribute the blog on LinkedIn, like we still like, let's just blog about it. Well, if you're selling to B2C home services companies, these guys and gals are in their truck all day long and they listen to podcasts and you would never know that if you hadn't asked them or, right? Like we need to get to that point. And they've told me this.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I like your point there of like in step one, when you're trying to discover the problem and you're asking these questions, just layer in some of those questions. What podcasts do you listen to? Are you subscribed to any YouTube channels? What social media channels are you on most often, right? What communities are you a part of? Who online are you following? Who's influencing the way you're thinking? I swear to you, if you ask those questions to all of your clients, you're going to get some insights into that are going to inform step number three in this process of deploying your POV to determine what are the discovery channels we should be deploying our POV to, right? It's like, you know, at teamwork.com, we've been so much focused on agencies and we're doing an event Wednesday night at Inbound coming up. Well, guess what? I shared that with one of our partners who was plugged into a HubSpot Facebook private group for HubSpot solution partners, shared it in there. The event sold out in 24 hours. Now, this is kind of a tangent. I don't mean to get on like event promotion or something like that, but without that inlet and that route into that private community of trust, right? We wouldn't have seen that same result. So same thing, if you're trying to deploy your POV out into the market, you need to find where are those nodes of trust and where are those watering holes, right? So just a little aside there, Nick, but I completely agree with you here, man.
It's all highly relevant. I use the B2C service-based business as an example because it was like, it's like such an eye opener to so many businesses to look at this and go, wow, like we're out here publishing stuff to putting ads on whatever platform. And these people are in their truck all day listening to podcasts, How do we get our CEO on the podcast that they listen to? Right? How do we get, like, whatever it is, how do we get our podcast into their rotation? And thinking about deploying and being able to share this POV in different ways. It's not as binary as it seems, just like publish the content and be done with it. So
yeah,
that's just like one of the lenses to look at deployment from. The rest of it is just understanding like the, what I would call is like the demand architecture, right? Like, how do you deal with demand? There's the capture, convert, and damming. And how do you redirect? This is a big one for agencies, is that they solve a lot of like traditional problems. We build websites, right? Like, people need new websites all the time. How do you redirect the need and the desire for a new website to something new and different that you do, to your niche space? And because most people, I guarantee you, most agencies you speak with, if you ask them who needs a new website, they're going to be like, most people don't need a new website. What they really need is blah, 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 blah. They're going to say, it's like, well, they don't actually need a new website. What you need is messaging help, or you need a sitemap overhaul or whatever. Like, they're going to tell you what they think you need. Getting someone from this place to the where you play and out of this, like the 3,800 agencies that build websites and on HubSpot into this other space, those are the types of ways that we think about deployment and how we communicate all this stuff that we just spent this time creating.
Yeah. I love that it came back to that headline of that article, which just made me smile and shake my head at the very same time. Well, Nick, this has been fantastic, man. I want to make sure that we make time for our final two segments that we always have here on Agency Life, our Fast Five, and give you the opportunity to shout out someone who has positively impacted your own agency life as you've gone from working inside of a larger agency to launching your own agency / consultancy for other agencies. So you ready for the Fast Five, my friend?
Let's do it. Hit me with it.
All right. If someone gave you $10,000 a month right now, Nick, to better run your consultancy, how would you use that extra investment of capital if there were just no strings attached right now?
I would bank it. I don't need extra tech to... I would bank it.
Thank you. Shortest and maybe best answer to that question so far here on Agency Life. All right. Number two, Nick, what are some of your all-time favorite books on business or marketing, things that have helped you in working in and running an agency?
22 Laws of Category Design.
All right. Good one. I don't think we've had anyone drop that one yet. Number three, what's one mistake you've made in agency life that you'll never forget?
I mean... There are too many to count.
You're like, how much time do we have?
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake, especially just getting started, is like not understanding what the most pressing things truly are. Like being able to prioritize as a new business owner. Like I lived my life as a marketer for so long. And now that I find myself as a business owner, I think this is what most business owners face. You're really good at the thing that you do and you love that thing. But as a business owner, now you have to take on all the other facets of running a business that are outside of the field that you like. So you're so deeply passionate about. And so just like trying to figure out, how do I prioritize and like deal with those things as a new business owner? Like what is important to deal with and what isn't, and what's pressing and what's not. So.
Yeah. As Matt Hines, who was on the show last week, said, just because you're good at baking cookies doesn't mean you're going to be good at running a bake shop.
Exactly.
Right. And he shared some great things in there about how to decide what to prioritize, what to delegate, those sorts of things. So if you're interested in what Nick's talking about there, check out last week's episode with Matt Hines if you missed that. All right. Number four and five are my absolute favorite of our Fast Five, Nick. So number four, what do you think is the hardest part about agency life?
The whiplash. It's the easiest way to call it. Like some days you're going to have 7 sales calls and everyone's going to say yes to you. And then some days you're going to have no sales calls or everyone's going to say no to you. I don't know if this is unique to agency life or if this is just unique to being a business owner, but you get some serious whiplash from the highs and lows of people absolutely love what you're doing and people don't get it.
I can relate to that, my friend. I think whiplash is a good way to describe it. All right. Number five, Nick, bringing it home. What's the best part about agency life?
You get to take people to new and different places that they really want to go to that is meaningful to them.
I love it. All right. We're going to round it out as we do on every episode here on Agency Life. Nick, we're going to give you the opportunity to give someone a shout out who has impacted your career journey, your agency life for the better. Who would you like to give a shout out to today?
His name's come up a few times today. I would give Pete Caputa the biggest shout out of all time, mainly because he is just as vested in my mission, not even me or my business, just the mission of helping agencies achieve greatness as I am. And his vested interest in that mission has created a ton of momentum for my platform and for my company. So it's definitely been wonderful just to collaborate with him on stuff. Pete's a great guy.
He is a great collaborator for sure. He's been talking about this idea of collaborative growth, which really has my eyes and ears open. And he is likely going to be a guest on this show. So if you've been following Pete or you're hearing what Nick's saying, he's got some great things to say from his experience scaling the partner program at HubSpot and now what they're doing at Databox. He and the Databox team and Carl Sakis have been doing some research and some surveys on this topic of how marketing agencies actually market themselves. So we're likely going to have both of them on to talk about some of the findings there. So if this is the first episode you've found of Agency Life, make sure you hit follow in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you do your listening to hear from the man himself once we have Pete on the show. Speaking of connecting, Nick, let people know how they can stay connected with you, follow some of the content that you're sharing, or get access to some of the content and resources that you mentioned in deploying these three steps to really own your niche for your agency.
Yeah, I am highly active on LinkedIn. So give me a follow or shoot me a DM. I love chatting with people, whether or not you want to work with me. If you just find interest in this stuff, I'd love jamming about it. So LinkedIn is the best place to find me. And if you want an access to the playbook, you can always DM me to get it. And I'll give it to you, Logan, so you can throw it in the show notes because it is free and available. I just want more people to have access to this type of thinking and to see the world through my eyes.
I love it, man. Well, Nick, thank you so much for dropping so much knowledge today. Glad we were able to connect, even though we weren't able to do it in person at Inbound this year, but there's always next year. Thank you so much for sharing with the audience today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
You've been listening to Agency Life. And if you made it this far, you're probably enjoying the show. If so, you can help other agency leaders find the show in about 14 more seconds. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, you can simply scroll down till you see ratings and reviews and tap the number of stars you think the show deserves. We'll really appreciate it, and so will the other agency leaders who find the show based on your rating. And if you're looking for even more content to support your agency life journey, check out teamwork.com/agency life. There you can search through past episodes, get access to the Agency Life newsletter, and find additional video content to support and inspire you as you continue on this crazy roller coaster ride that is agency life.